Our next presenter is Colette DeFelt. She holds a master's in environmental science from Washington State University. She is based in Moscow, Idaho, and she does extension programming for the University of Idaho, which includes 10 northern counties in Idaho. For more than 25 years, she's been working with farmers, community members, nonprofits, government agencies, and universities in the Inland Northwest to develop community food systems and small farms programs. Colette has offered numerous educational workshops, conferences, field tours, webinars, and online courses on local food systems, small acreage farming and ranching, and sustainable agriculture. Her current work includes developing regional value change and increasing the competitiveness of local food businesses, expanding markets for small farms and artisan grain producers, small acreage and beginning farmer education, programming for Idaho women farmers and ranchers, and on farm safety education. Colette is a co-founder of the Cultivating Success trademarked Sustainable Small Farms Education Program and co-founder of the Coolidge Clearwater Food Coalition. Colette serves as the City of Moscow Farmers Market Commission and is also an advisor for FAIR in Idaho, a new trade association for independent food and agriculture businesses. Prior to working with University of Idaho Extension, she served as Executive Director for the Special Projects Director for Rural Roots, an Idaho-based farm organization. In her free time, Colette enjoys hiking and kayaking, spending time with her two children, preparing and eating local food with friends, and motorcycle riding in Idaho's backcountry roads with her husband. So thank you, Colette, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. And a lot of what I have to say today really is in alignment with what Sarah shared. So I'm going to be talking about how we've had to respond to the unimaginable. You know, we've had to do that across our food system, and Idaho is no different. So I'm going to talk primarily about what we've seen in Idaho. I'm going to talk a little bit about what we've seen in some of the areas next to Idaho, particularly what we've seen in Washington. And I really believe that from talking to colleagues, there's a lot of similarities around the West. But again, Idaho is a pretty rural state, and so there's some uniquenesses when we start to look at our inland areas. So I'm just going to be able to give a snapshot of what it looked like when the pandemic hit Idaho, the different responses that we saw to producers' needs, some of the changes in both direct and intermediated markets, and then some of the challenges and opportunities as Idaho rebounds, which looks like it's a little ways off. So the pandemic really came to Idaho in the beginning of March. We started to hear about it, middle of March, around the time that many of our schools went into spring break. There was discussion about whether or not children would go back to school. The University of Idaho asked us to work remotely, and we were really concerned across our local food and agricultural sectors about what was going to happen. So about 5 days before our governor put out a self-isolate order, I launched a survey, and it was really a sensing survey to understand what are our farm and local food practitioners facing right now, what do they need immediately, and then what do they see that they need longer term. We had about 80 people that responded to one or more of our questions. The majority of those were farmers and ranchers, and so you can see that from this screen. We also heard some food retailers, distributors, food processors, and people that were managing markets or volunteers within the community. People were able to say that they had more than one hat, which we often see when we're talking about local or regional food systems. Somebody may be a farmer, but they are also the farmer's market manager. So that's why you see that the bars add up to more than the actual number of respondents that are directly related to food and farming. Most of our respondents were from North Idaho and Southwest Idaho, which is where we have our most developed direct and intermediated markets for small farm and ranch products. It's also where we've seen a lot of emphasis on culinary tourism in the last several years. So it's not surprising that we heard from more farmers in that area. When we asked people about, you know, are they shifting their plans? We just wanted to know what's on the top of their mind. And 61% of the people said yes. We're trying to figure out what to do. And about a quarter of the people said no, they were hunkering down and just seeing how things played out. And then we had a lot of people that talked about they didn't know yet what they were going to do, and that came up a lot in the comments. We asked people if they were planning on shifting, what they planned to do. And there were really two major categories, changing market strategies, so really looking at how not to be so dependent on restaurants and farmers markets. So what were their opportunities for farm stands? What did online sales platforms offer? Could they get linked into those? Could they expand or start CSAs? How would they do home delivery? And some even were saying, we think we're going to be donating more food because we're not going to have the market to sell it. In terms of management strategies, interestingly enough, a number of people said, wow, we're going to actually increase our production because we think there's going to be more demand for local food because there's so much uncertainty on the side of the consumers. A few people said that they were going to change what they produce, thinking that they were going to be looking at more staple products. Many thought that maybe they were going to have to decrease employees for safe operating, but also were wondering, what happens if I get sick? What's going to happen on my farm? I need a contingency plan, but what I really need is to know how to operate safely during this pandemic. And then a few said that they were looking at decreasing production. And one of the things that's important to remember is that by March, if you're a vegetable producer, in our region, you've already started most of your crops because you're using season extension, your markets are planned. So shifting from one market to the other is not necessarily an easy thing, or changing your production. So some of the things that we saw people do is if they had a more narrow selection of products, they were quickly trying to buy seeds to diversify their operating their management and what crops that they could offer, for instance, in a CSA. But overall, this quote is really indicative of where people were. Distribution, increased home deliveries, unknown farmers market availability, unknown wholesale contracts, increased food safety, who knows what else. People were really reeling and trying to figure out how do we move forward. So information people needed in the moment was really this marketing assistance, the online presence and sales. A lot of our growers did not have that online presence because they were really focused on that relationship market primarily through our farmers markets. And then they really needed help in thinking through direct-to-consumer sales. And then COVID-19 specific information. How do we operate safely in our established markets, like in farmers markets? But how do we do that if we're thinking about developing a CSA? How are we going to do financial transactions? What are those contingency plans? Where do we get sanitation supplies? And how do we know that we're actually sanitizing? And then there were a few people that were saying, we think we're going to need financial assistance. In the longer term, we asked, you know, we knew that we needed to respond immediately to the needs that we saw in our local food systems and with our small farms and ranchers. But we also wanted to know what kind of support do people think they're going to need farther out, so several months out. And it was interesting, production information was still on the top of that list. Marketing information was second, and then food safety was third. The real priority was food safety immediately. So what was the response? One of the things that we just jumped into immediately was looking on building the relationships that we had within our local food systems and looking at the marketing opportunities. And across Idaho, we have a very strong small farms and food systems team that works on our Cultivating Success program. So immediately we got together, we looked at the results, and we said, okay, who can we partner with to move forward? And our farmers market leadership was an obvious partner. They were already talking with us. And so we started to move into working with producers to say, okay, can we shift some of this early season to look at online platforms? Is this an option? Can some markets actually take on management of those? And this was the time where we were waiting to get word whether or not farmers markets were essential businesses in Idaho. And not long after we started convening and we launched the survey, we did find that out. So then it was like, how can we operate these markets safely, and how can we work with our local government to permit our markets, and what are going to be the provisions that we have to enact to be able to start the markets and operate them safely. So we had a lot of conversations, a lot of Zoom meetings, and markets really needed that support and to talk to their producers about how to move forward. And I'm going to go into some very specific examples of how they did that. So as I said, you know, we had a lot of marketing assistance, a lot of more conversations to dial in what the needs are and what were the possibilities and capacity at the community level to implement and support some new marketing strategies. And then we delved very deeply into what are the best practices for operating during COVID-19. And so I was able to partner with Stephanie Smith from Washington State University and Faith Kreitzer. We developed some webinars. We got them out there immediately. And we not only talked to farmers and market managers about how to operate safely and what we knew about the virus at that time, we started interacting with consumers and having consumer-facing webinars about this is how you can find local food, this is how you can support your farmers, these are the important things that you need to do as a consumer to be safe and make sure your farmers and your markets can operate safely. We felt it was really important to make sure we had science-based resources, so we have a very comprehensive web page that spans the food system and gleaned from many universities and government agencies things that apply to the food system and put them together and really elevated that through new outreach, through bi-monthly e-newsletters, again, more meetings with farmers market leadership, many meetings with restaurateurs, farm-to-table restaurant leadership, and then developing some specific things for farmers like UPIC signage. So this was all happening within less than a four-week period from that March 20th date into April. So then, you know, what happened as a result of all of this coming together? Well, farmers markets made some amazing adaptations, and these were really led by community members. So market managers, producers, volunteers, restaurant owners, and they came together, and so everything was unique for the community that they were serving. What we did see overall is that many markets delayed their opening because they needed to get everything in line. Some in our rural communities have a shorter growing season, so they were really on track to open in June or July. But those in May were like, do we have to delay? And so there was a lot of learning between markets. And what you see in this picture are markets putting dots down Main Street so that they could have social distancing and help people understand what that was. We saw motor in markets where people were ordering online and the markets facilitated drive-through pickup. This is how the Boise Farmers Market operated the entire season. It was online and it was motor in, and it took like a hundred volunteers a week to make that happen. So the amount of community capital that came into these farmers market programs was huge. And so these footprints, lessons learned, and that sharing was super important for people able to respond quickly. But what we also did see is that we had fewer vendors at market because some were not comfortable coming to market because they felt that they were at risk. If they had their own high-risk issues in terms of their health, or they didn't know how they were going to operate, they switched out of the market. We also saw that many markets didn't allow craft vendors. So it was really focused on those essential businesses of food, and that really changed the dynamic of the market. So what we saw and what we consistently heard over the season, that sales were better than expected in both rural and urban markets. When the markets got open and they were up and running, people were coming, and vendors were seeing increased sales from individual customers. So while customer counts might be down, people were buying more at market. We also saw that farmers who had more of a pre-existing relationship with customers in the community did better. Newer farmers that had a lot of early season items like bedding plants, they had some loss of sales at that beginning of the season and had to really think about how are we going to get these things that we already had started, like our bedding plants, out to our customers. At the same time, people were growing gardens and they were wanting bedding plants. So we saw a lot of Facebook connection happening. There were huge challenges scheduling and processing for livestock for direct sales. And that is something that many of our producers go to market to raise visibility of their livestock. Many were selling out very early in terms of their custom sales. And then as the market progressed and they opened more, practices were kind of being dialed in, people knew how to operate the market safely, there were tensions that increased, as we saw across our communities, tensions between wearing face coverings, following social distance protocols, and not. And so at one point in time, the Moscow Farmers Market had to close because there were such tensions in the community, they didn't know that they could keep it to be a safe environment. So there were some very specific things that on certain days actually hurt markets and farmers, of course, in that process. We did see a lot of increase in direct-to-consumer sales, so expanded CSAs with modified delivery methods. So some of those methods would be that they were delivering to customers' houses instead of a central pickup location, or instead of picking up on the farm, farmers saying, we're going to go out and have a pickup site like next to our local brewery because we want to help them have their to-go sales increase. How can we create new market-driven collaborations? In the bottom of your screen, you see a picture with some baked goods, cheeses, beef, lettuce, packaged pancake and waffle mix. This is a group of food producers and farmers and ranchers that got together and started a weekly delivery box back in April. It's been really successful. They're going to keep doing that, but they knew we have to figure out, we don't know if the market is going to be able to operate. How can we start to work together? How can we share the success? We saw an increased number of farm stands, and some of those farm stands being at other businesses like convenience stores. Community-driven farm-to-table Facebook groups, there were so many of them, and they were starting to make their own lists of how can you find farms. And then, as I already mentioned, increased sale of local meat and custom livestock. So one of the things that we really did understand is that we didn't have enough online presence for these direct market sales to largely shift from farmers market to direct to consumer. And that was a huge gearing up that had to happen. In our state, many of the small farms and ranchers that are selling direct sell to independent grocers, co-ops, and very small retail stores. So what we've seen there is there are strong periphery sales, fresh produce, dairies, eggs, meat, which are often those products that are locally sourced, that in times where the larger distributors did not have flour to go to the larger grocery stores, that we had local flour on the shelf and we had an increase in sale of local flour. But those retail establishments that have deli sales, which can be quite a significant portion of that retailer's business, those sales declined. And a lot of that was because there wasn't indoor dining to go along with those sales. And that experience of local food and that dining, that community-centered piece is really huge for delis and also for restaurants. So we definitely immediately lost our farm-to-table restaurant sales in March when our restaurants had to close and go to takeout only. And our beverage establishments, so our coffee shops, our wineries, our breweries, were in that same situation. And they have not recovered. They are down 50% or more. Right before this meeting, I was on a call with Moscow downtown businesses, and there was a coffee shop, and they said that, you know, businesses are thinking about what is it that we have to sell every day to break even. And our local coffee shop that has sourced locally said, since March, I have met that target one time. And everybody's nodding their heads. So we've seen a lot of innovation with farm-to-table restaurant leadership and beverage establishments coming together. And I wanted to reference a few of those things. One of the things that we saw in Boise was the establishment of City of Good. If you Google it, you'll come up with their website. And this was farm-to-table restaurants who recognized that they needed to have employment for their hospitality workers, their staff, that they were major buyers from local farmers, and farmers were going to be hurt by their clothing. So they actually established a situation where you could buy a food box, and with that food box purchase, you could fund weekend fuel kits for kids. So they were focusing on their culinary workers, still buying from local farmers and food producers, and then making that food available to the people that were hurt most by the pandemic. And at the beginning of December, they had provided 17,634 meals through their Fuel Kits for Kids program. So that's an amazing piece of innovation. We also saw a similar program start in Spokane, Washington, and Pullman, Washington, which are in the Eastern Washington area. Our farm-to-table restaurants and largely our bars or microbrewery leadership also developed a new trade association, Fair Idaho. And this organization is really, it has responded on the part of these industries to the challenges of COVID. The overall long-term goal is to create market relationships in Idaho from farmers and food producers through restaurants, bars, distillers, and retail. So it is a cross-sector organization, and membership is growing. There's over 140 members, and they have launched a Dine, Drink Safe and a Shop Safe campaign where people voluntarily, they stay up on the rules for what the best operating practices are, and they're starting to market themselves as safe places to go. And I think these are really innovative things in a state where we don't have a statewide mask mandate. We have some communities that have a mask mandate and social distancing mandates, like Boise and Moscow, Idaho. And so in those situations, the restaurants and bars who would buy those local products are really hurting, and they can't buy. Other parts of the state that don't have mask mandates, they're having robust sales, or businesses that are choosing not to follow the mandates because they're not necessarily enforced in certain communities, then they're actually seeing a huge customer base. And so what I wanted to point out is that the impact on restaurants and beverage establishments is not equal across the state. We had a few regionally, some farmers to food box type programs where farmers were working together either through Link Foods, which is a distribution co-op that's farmer worker owned, or other associations like the Inland Northwest Farmers Market Association, that is an association of 10 markets in the Spokane area. And I just wanted to point out that this is kind of where I'm talking a little bit more about what happened regionally, because we don't have these food distribution co-op similarities within Idaho right now. So Link Foods, they, prior to the pandemic, as an aggregator, 85 to 90% of their product was going to go into institutional markets and restaurants, so these larger markets. And they realized that they had to pivot really quickly. But through their online ordering system and some previous experience, they pivoted to having a Link box where people could order individually online, and they could go to central distribution points. And that helped them in the first month or two of the pandemic. And then through the CARES Act, they were able to participate in the Farmers to Food Box or Farmers to Families Food Box program. And that was a lifesaver for them. And that was also true for many of the farmers that are part of the Inland Northwest Farmers Market Association. They worked with two partners, Share Farm and Spokane Food Fighters, and they put in an application, and they were able to do distribution of food boxes. And so both of these organizations have amazing interviews on Rocks to Roots, which is a podcast series that our Spokane Conservation District does. So I really encourage you to listen to those. They can share a lot of details. But just a couple things to think about: that Link Foods was providing 300 to 800 boxes of local food per week into the Spokane community. And the Idaho Northwest Farmers Market Association was serving 1,200 families. And so this was, in some ways, one of the really positive things that we saw, is that these relationships and collaborations, we're able to provide local food to people that may not have been able to afford it before. And in case of the Inland Northwest Farmers Market Association, they saw that having the pickup of those boxes at their markets increased the EBT transactions for shopping at those markets as well. So gaps and challenges. The pandemic has illuminated gaps and challenges that we already have in our local and regional food systems. We don't have enough poultry and livestock processing options in our region. I think that this is pretty, this is across Idaho, but also we hear about our neighboring states. And so this has been a limiting factor. And some people were not able and are not able to get their livestock processed, even though they would have a market for them. Our small farms and ranchers largely do not do the record keeping needed to qualify for federal financial assistance programs. And so when we're looking at these farms that may have gross sales of, you know, $120,000, $130,000 or less, they were not poised to take advantage of some of the things that were offered. And that with our lack of broadband across our rural states, online education and internet marketing is not possible in some areas. We realized that we didn't have good contact information for small farms and ranchers, and we didn't have central places for people to find the farmers and ranchers that they wanted to buy from. And one of the things that happened is that, you know, these Facebook groups really stepped into that space. And then we had these small farm and ranch nonprofits that were in our state, but they've been struggling financially, and they were not able to step in and take advantage of some of the opportunities that might be there to help our local food systems. So, for instance, that City of Good program that happened in Boise, we did not have an option to do that in Moscow because we didn't have a support system for that. So new challenges, of course, loss of our restaurants and institutional markets and a lot of our agritourism and canceled events. We also see that we have limited production and marketing supplies, and we anticipate having seed shortages for several years to come. But new opportunities were new relationships across producers, increased appreciation and interest in local food, and these consumer-driven connections. Again, the farm to food bank programs were a success. And then this cross-sector statewide trade association that I think is going to make a lot of difference for local food systems in the long term. So with that, thank you. And I really appreciate being on today and look forward to our next presenter.
Great, Colette. Thank you so much for the great presentation. And again, we will be doing a roundtable of questions after all presenters are done today.